Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's up? What's happening? It's The Hoffman Show. That's a podcast where we go deeper and longer than we can on the radio because, well, Sam Fortier, that's what podcasts are for.
Wow. I love the medium.
Yeah. You're a fan.
I'm a fan of sitting in the studio talking to you about things that fire us both up.
Yeah, like city council workings, which is where some of our attention is going to be for the next couple of months. Sam is here today to talk about the latest on the RFK Stadium deal, which was announced between the mayor's office and the team on Monday, the day after the NFL draft. Nothing else going on. Couldn't do that on any other day, huh?
Dude, I woke up on Sunday morning, and as you know, like the NFL draft, you're there Thursday night, you're there Friday night, you're there Saturday, and like Thursday and Friday, I didn't get home until 2 a.m. just because they picked really late, and then you got to then start going to work, and then there's a video and all that stuff. And I woke up Sunday, and I was like, oh, okay, like, you know, get to relax.
Nice, relax.
And then I get a tip, you know, at like 11 a.m., like, hey, like, there's this thing coming tomorrow, and I'm just like, you got to be kidding me, you know? Like, this is like, when my Nana is like, oh, it's the off season. Like, what are you going to do? It's like, there is no off season, Nana. The NFL, like,
yeah,
the NFL's year round.
Settle down, Nana. You think, I'll come and visit when I can in July. There's 3 days that might work.
Right, exactly.
If you don't have a player that's on the franchise tag. But
seriously.
I got a call on Sunday with the press alert for Monday and saying, hey, can you go to this? I was like, no, I had 24 hours notice. I cannot rearrange my life. Also, it was Mystics Media Day, and I had like 7 one-on-one set up. I wasn't going to bail on them, not to mention some of the other stuff that was happening that day. So I was reliant on the fact that you and Kaim and everybody that was there was going to ask good questions and did a great job. But now we've had a couple days to not only unpack what was said, what was announced, but you and your team at the Post have done additional reporting. We're, you know, the whip count is starting on the city council. Let's peel it all the way back, though, since this is a podcast and we're going long and deep on this. Why was this a story that you wanted to cover as someone who, you know, obviously it's the Commander's beat. This is a huge story, but you guys have so many different people at the Post that can do football and non-football things around this team, and you have been on this story from go. What is so fascinating to you about this that you wanted to sink your teeth in and be a part of it?
Craig, I appreciate you asking, man. Like, it's just something that 3 years ago, I remember, you know, they started talking about Prince William County and we're going to go down there. You know, this was under the Snyder ownership. I just, like, it was my assignment one day, and I kind of got fascinated unspooling the thread of the intersection of business, politics, and sports. I think really interests me because it's like, okay, we're talking about the mayor's budget and how much taxpayers are going to have to pay. And I know that a lot of people are like, that is so boring. Please don't talk to me about that. But to me, that is just as fascinating as like Terry McLaurin, how do you stack a receiver and or how do you stack a DB and like win the hand fighting early so you can win down the field late? It's just how things work, and it being a field that I was not, you know, super familiar with, it was like, you know, you'd read one article and then you'd be like, wait. So I'd ask a couple sources like, hey, am I reading this right? And then it just like keeps building and building.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm like reading books, and then it's like about stadium stuff. And then it's like, I'm talking about the tax code, and then I like feel like I really have a good understanding of the ballpark fee, which is going to be like a huge funding stream that pays for this stadium. And it's like, oh, I just like.
And next thing you know, you're on Capitol Hill.
And exactly. And then you're like in these meeting rooms, and you're like, you know, AOC is walking by, or Steve Daines is walking by, and you're like, oh, like these are the people who are like, you know, making real decisions for like our country. And it's just, I don't know, like as a journalism nerd, like trying to figure things out, it just was a challenge, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I am a political junkie. Like, I enjoy listening to, you know, podcasts or reading stuff about what's going on. And so I think it's important because it explains how the world works. And I think this is one where you take some of the traditional left-right out of it in a lot of ways, especially in a city like DC, where everybody's got a D next to their name anyway, and there's still everyone fighting. And it's like, oh, nope, same interpersonal, same like whatever, but this is not necessarily a traditional left-right thing. And I think because of that too, with our current political climate being so antagonistic, like it allows you to talk about this stuff and look at it in a way that if this was, I mean, even when it was still in Congress, like you put out something and then there go the comments because everyone's favorite or least favorite politician is involved. And now that it's in the city council, like I think we really get to see how this legislative sausage is made. And I think that's going to be interesting, eye-opening, and hopefully not terribly disappointing for us over the next 3 months with the negotiations between the team, the mayor, and the city council.
No, absolutely. And it's like how the world works is the perfect way to put it, because to me, it's like, wait, you know, the city council chairman is a Democrat, Phil Mendelson, and the mayor is a Democrat, Muriel Bowser. Why are they at odds? And also, like, the mayor is working with James Comer, like the Republican chair of the House Oversight Committee that's talking about DC's crime bill. Like, how did she forge an alliance with a guy that is like theoretically like interfering in city affairs? And so, like, obviously, I know the answer is politics, but where do they see the advantage in each other was like really fascinating to me to try to demystify. And that, like, her ability to work with Comer was obviously the key. And Eleanor Holmes Norton introduced the bill bipartisan, but it's like, we are not talking about the commanders coming home to DC unless you zoom all the way out. And really, like, back to even when Dan Snyder started having these conversations in 2008, like, this is a story to me that's like 3 decades in the making. And it's a thing that so many people care so much about. Like, when the announcement happened, I know a lot of Commanders fans. Like, that's who I've been writing about for so long. It's like the emotion that people felt and the enthusiasm people felt. It's like, I feel like I just have a much greater appreciation of how we got here because I was able to dig in like that.
For sure. And I think that the joy that people felt this season for those that went to games at RFK back in the day, like, you know, there is some element of nostalgia here that is definitely influencing, which I thought was hilarious at the press conference, because you might have asked the question even about Harris and nostalgia. Was that you who asked that?
No,
or was
it
somebody else?
It wasn't me. It was someone else, but so, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so he was like, you know, Harris is asked, oh, is nostalgia playing a role here, basically? And he goes, no, and then lists a bunch of things that absolutely fall under the category of nostalgia. And the thing is, though, I feel like with nostalgia, there is an inherent untruth to it. It's like, oh, it's glossy. Your memory is glossier than the reality was. When everyone says the exact same thing, and you have the video to back it up, and you see the stands bouncing, and like opposing players, home players were like, that was the hardest place to play, or the best place to play if you were wearing the burgundy and gold back then. Like, it's just, I understand why it means so much to so many people. And then that's the best memory compounded by the 25 years of the Snyder era and no joy basically outside of 2012. And then you have this past year and it just feels like so many things are going in the right direction, but it is like all that, those good feelings aren't going to be what gets this done. It's going to be the nitty gritty inside deal making and satisfying this politician in Ward 7 and this politician in Ward 5. And what can, and so much of politics is that, right? Like, what can I get for my people? Which I think gets to, or like, what can I do to satisfy my one core belief that made me run for office in the first place? Right. And I feel like that particular thing is like, that's the James Comer angle of this. Like, James Comer is an actual dyed in the wool, red, right wing, not right wing, like, you know, whatever, like right wing economically, small government Republican. And he looked at the RFK site and said, we're paying for this to do nothing. And that's how Mayor Bowser was able to find the common ground. And I'm curious if there's any other things like from those types of relationships that you saw her work or other things that are either untold or undertold that you thought were interesting from that process. And then we can kind of get to what was announced Monday and where we go from here.
Yeah, I think like so my colleagues, Megan Flynn, Aaron Cox and Paul Kane, you know, a bunch of us at the Post did like a TikTok, we call it, not like TikTok the app, but TikTok like the
TikTok
the
Sammy over here. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a post, an actual print article that's done chronologically.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's just, when you look back, like her ability to reach across the aisle and figure out that relationship with Comer and then really like to get everyone on board along the way because they passed it. I think people should understand they used a vehicle called unanimous consent, which is basically like on the last day of Congress, they put up all these bills that are like super non-controversial. Like, should we rename a post office in Mason, Ohio? Just things that would pass 100-0. And when they didn't get in like the spending bill at the end of the year, they had to pass 100-0. And if you think about like how complicated and messy and fraught this had been for so long, the idea of it passing 100-0 was far-fetched. It was ludicrous. And so on the last night, you know, you figure out, okay, Steve Daines from Montana, like we have worked with the Wetzel family, the Native American family that's credited with designing the logo. Like you're good. Maryland, who's had a lot of exceptions to this, you're good. Like figuring out all of those pieces. And that took everybody. It was a coalition of the mayor's office, of the team, of the NFL, of, you know, senators themselves. You know, Chuck Schumer reads it at 1:15 a.m. or whatever it was. And he says, like, is anyone opposed? And then no one says anything and it passes. That's just an incredible moment that to me is the political version of Jaden Daniels dropping back and throwing a Hail Mary.
Yeah. I mean, I remember waking up the next morning and just looking at, like staring at my phone being like, I'm sorry, what happened? Like there's, it was dead. I went to bed last night and it was dead. And here we are. And now all of a sudden, that's what, 3-4 months ago at this point, President Biden signs that into legislation. Josh Harris, Roger Goodell are there. Administration changes. And then here we are now with the land in D.C.'s hands. And it was something that I actually wanted to try to understand on our radio show. So Sam and I are taping this on Wednesday, April, what is it, 30th?
30th.
So this would have been yesterday. I had Tom Sherwood, the great Tom Sherwood from WAMU on, who is just legendary political analyst in the city. And I was basically like, you've got Phil Mendelson, the DC City Council chair, complaining that like I haven't been involved in anything. Like, is this the normal process? Because it would seem like you'd want to work with the mayor's office and city council to do this. And he's like, no, this is actually like how this goes. The mayor does stuff, puts together proposals, and then they'll work on city council. But there's also been some reporting that maybe there has been some more contact between the team and city council, et cetera. So from the time that that bill passes to Monday's announcement, what was happening that you've been able to, that you either were privy to along the way and kind of keeping track of quietly in your notebook to stuff that you figured out and along with Megan and your team over the last couple of days, what was the process to get from we got this approved, we're standing in the Oval Office watching former President Biden sign it to Monday's press announcement?
Yeah, I mean, they had been discussing, you know, a framework of a deal, like just getting their ducks in a row before that. But I mean, they had been talking to Maryland and D.C. It was between D.C. and Maryland, like Virginia is not in play at all. But they're talking to both jurisdictions. And I think, you know, things move pretty rapidly after that signing. You know, we're here just 3 months later. And so I think it's just a conversation of like, okay, who gets what at what site? What does it look like? How do we do the parking? You know, who gets development rights over this area? How does that area look? It's just, those are all of the things that you're ironing through. And, you know, at some point, everybody has to present their best and final offer. We don't have the details on the Maryland offer. Wes Moore said they made a great offer, as you know, you would expect an executive to say. We don't have the details on that. But DC obviously comes in with an offer that, to taxpayers, in the end, like if you sort through all the numbers, DC taxpayers will put in just over $1 billion in the end. What did Maryland come in at? I would be, you know, that's obviously something fascinating because what is the gap between what they're willing to accept? I mean, obviously Maryland has a lot more people, has a much bigger budget, but the pull of DC obviously is very strong emotionally. The fans, you know, we did some polling last April that, you know, fans, Washingtonians, And then district residents in particular and Commanders fans in particular wanted the team to end up here rather than in suburban Maryland or Northern Virginia. And so Josh Harris and his crew get to a point where they have an announcement. And I would say real quick, because I was doing a Q&A with some of our subscribers earlier, and people were like, hey, what are the odds this ends up like the Ted Leonsis deal to go to Virginia? Because here we are with, you know, a pep rally-esque press conference between an executive and a sports team owner. Like, why is this one not going to fall apart? And I would say two big reasons. One, Josh Harris and Muriel Bowser have signed an agreement. There is a term sheet. Actually, Craig, I brought something.
Oh, Sam's got props, everybody.
I have props. I brought the term sheet. I brought all of the documents that the mayor's office has put out about this. And so, and you know, I've gone through, I've highlighted. So people can see, like, this is, you know.
That's a real legal document
it's,
there.
Yeah, it's real. So, and so I would point out that unlike, not that, you know, this means everything, but like Josh Harris's signature is on this page and Muriel Bowser's signature is on this page. There was never a signed document between Leonsis and Youngkin. And I would also say that Ted Leonsis had put a lot of money into the area surrounding Cap One Arena downtown. You know, like they have the Monumental Sports Network TV studios. Right. There's a bunch of different things they've done down there. And I think that Northwest Stadium is a clearly worse fallback option for Josh Harris than Cap One would have been for Ted Leonsis. And so
I actually don't think, for whatever it's worth, I think Monumental pulled the Virginia thing to get DC to the table. And that might have been a feature, not a bug, of not having a signed agreement.
I disagree with that. Like going through the whole reporting process, I don't think that's the case, but obviously they ended up with something that they wanted anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that Josh Harris and Muriel Bowser are both very committed to making this happen. And so that's not to say that, like, so basically to me, the question is, can someone on the DC council or another grassroots organization in the city pull a Louise Lucas, the Virginia state senator who single-handedly basically tanked that deal? Can someone do that in this case? And I don't know.
Well, obviously, they're going to vote on it. Mendelsohn, even though he's the chair, like he can't just be like, oh, I'm not bringing it up for a vote. So they're going to vote on this. July is the current imposed deadline that probably holds. But, you know, Mendelsohn's already like, well, it's not enough time to go through it. And the thing is, now, you know, this term sheet, enjoy it while it lasts, because it's going to change. Like, the thing is that now the negotiations start with city council. And this is where things get fun in terms of, okay, we want the current plan is parking spaces that ultimately become parking structures. Well, I've already heard one city council member Charles Allen, tell Grant Danny yesterday that he doesn't like the way that those are done, where the Commanders are going to keep all the money. He's like, no, we should get to keep that money because we're going to own them through Events DC. Like, that seems like a reasonable ask. And that seems like also the kind of thing that you build in if you are Josh Harris to be like, if for some reason they don't pick up on this, like, we'll keep it. But if not, maybe that's a concession we can make. There are going to be certain red lines where it's like, no, that's how it's got to be. There's going to be other things that are negotiable. As you've gone through this stuff, what are some of the things that stand out to you as maybe the most contentious pieces that will be discussed and perhaps tweaked over the next 3 months as city council and the Commanders and the mayor's office all try to come together on a deal that gets 7 votes on city council?
The number one most contentious thing is going to be just over $1 billion of taxpayer money, because when you look at the comparison, I know that, you know, other jurisdictions have done more, but and I know that, you know, their big talking point is $2.7 billion from the team is the largest private investment in the city's history, and I know that's their big talking point, but I still think that there are some council members, Charles Allen included, who say, like, why are we spending $1 billion? Like, why are taxpayers spending $1 billion? And that's still going to be an issue. Phil Mendelsohn, the chairman, has long said, we would love the stadium there. We would love development there. But I do not support taxpayer funding for a stadium. And a lot of people say, like, why should I give a tax break to a billionaire? That's going to be the number one contention. And then also, I would say probably second is, you know, how many events does a football stadium have? We need more housing in this city. And, you know, the Commanders are going to come back with, hey, the stadium only takes up 16% of the site. It's a large site. It's a 177-acre site. Like, that's going to be, I think, the fight. And ultimately, it's going to be up to the council and the citizens to decide, like, is this worth it? Because I think that, like, the thing is that a lot of people understand that stadiums in general, stadiums specifically, football stadiums, do not deliver the economic return that the studies say they do. Or, you know,
the city funded studies
find, yeah. Right? But, you know, I've seen, like, in the chat, I've gotten emails about it. Like, there are some citizens who say it is worth the cost because this will be a national stadium. If DC wants to be a big time stadium, why are we having the World Cup here and there's no games played in the nation's capital? Like, that's embarrassing. And so, you know, I think that it's really just going to come down to what can the city council accept, what will citizens accept, and that's going to be a huge sticking point to me.
So let's dive into some of those arguments, if you will, because I think like there's a lot of language here that gets real political. That is very, when I say political, it's politicians trying to sell constituents on, this is the right thing for the city. This is the right thing. This is why what I'm fighting for, and thus why you should vote for me again, basically, right? But it does get into some value judgments of like, I, as a district citizen, I'm willing to pay some extra taxes to have the stadium at the RFK site because I want it in the city. That is not just for, you know, what it can do revenue wise. That's not economic reasons. I'm not an economist. I don't have to drive as far. I like having it close by. I like having it metro accessible. So like, I personally am willing to pay that convenience and split the cost with my fellow citizens for not having the stadium in certainly Prince William County, but even in Landover. So there's that side of it. But then there's also kind of the claims that get made here on some of the financing where they're saying, oh, we won't have to introduce any new taxes because they're extending the already existing ballpark tax, or they're going to, you know, apply that same principle to the stadium. And some of the money is actually going to be generated from 2030 to 2032 once the stadium is open. And then you say, okay, well, that money is then paying back the rest of the bonds, and then the profits can start after that. The other big part is that, and this is where I don't know if you know the answer, but like I would want to ask a Charles Allen, a Phil Mendelson, these types of questions is, The argument for not building the stadium is you don't need a stadium to anchor a neighborhood, which is absolutely correct. And every economist will tell you it is better. Like, if you want better return for investment, build more housing, build grocery stores, build shops, build all those things, not a football stadium. But if you don't have a football stadium, you still have to build the roads, update the metro, do all the infrastructure work that the money that is being, or is the public money, would have to pay for. So like, do we have any idea what an alternate plan would look like and how much that would cost taxpayers? Because I think that is a relevant thing, because they're trying to make it seem like, oh, well, if you build a stadium, it's going to be $1 billion of public money. And if you build no stadium, it's $0.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more. And get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Public money. But I want to know how all this stuff's getting done without the Commanders $2.7 billion, even if a lot of that might go to the stadium, because that is a relevant figure in fact here as well.
Totally. And that's something that we don't have a lot of clarity on, because the mayor and the council have not put forward, which makes a lot of sense, because this is plan A.
Right.
And they're going to go hard on plan A until, you know, it gets voted down or it gets approved. But we don't have a great sense of, if the stadium was not there, you know, how many more housing units would there be? How much public investment would it cost? You know, people always talk about the Wharf 2.0, basically, or that's the model they want to use. And I think that, you know, there's very legitimate concerns, talking to my Metro colleagues, about when you go to the Wharf, there's some affordable housing, there's some like luxury housing, and there's like very little in the middle.
Yeah.
So when they promise, okay,
you also pay the RFK $8,000 to park.
Right. The RFK site, the city says is 30% is going to be affordable housing. But then, like, how do you make sure that it's not 30% affordable and 70% luxury?
Right.
I think that that's like creating not just a community, but a well-balanced community. I think that's going to be something that the mayor's office is going to have to figure out too. And it's important to acknowledge that when they go public, that does not mean they have every single detail ironed out. The Commanders, for example, have not even hired an architect yet. But you have to go public because if you're going to have this many people involved, like, it's going to come out. And so you want to set the terms of, hey, this is how we want to present our idea. But basically, like, we know the big numbers, 2.7 private investment, just over $1 billion public investment. Here's where the sites are. Here's who would control these different districts. But we don't have all of the details yet. And that's something that, like, I think council members and citizens have a real opportunity to shape going forward is, hey, what demands or what concessions can we get them to accept as they hammer out the finer points of this deal?
The other big thing that I find fascinating, I think you're a great person to ask about this, is the idea that this land is probably still locked up in Congress without the lobbying effort of the Commanders and the NFL. And while Josh Harris has said the right thing, which is, we think this land is best in DC's hands and letting DC decide what to do with it, they're not going to be this involved if they didn't think they were getting a stadium out of the deal. If they put in that much work and that much money to lobby and the effort and the time and all that kind of stuff, and then it's like, all right, now we got the land. You guys have fun with it. He's not going to be psyched about that. do you think that argument will carry any water with any of the city council folks who are currently know or currently undecided on this, that, like, you don't have this decision to make if it's without the Commanders, that this land would still be locked up and rotting away for at least another year, and like it has been for most of the last 30 years.
I think that that was one of Maryland's main arguments when they were raising objections to the RFK bill in the first place. They said, hey, like, you're doing this to get a football stadium, and we don't believe that using taxpayer funds in a football stadium, you know, or we don't believe that, you know, giving the Commanders free federal land, they're paying $1 in rent. We don't think that that is like a fair competition. That was like their main counter argument. And so when you would ask Charles Allen or any of these council members, like, they love that DC has control of the land. No one wants RFK Stadium as it's been for the last 20 years.
Right.
But it's all about taxpayer funding. So is there any argument to, like, the Commanders helped you out? I would say if I'm a council member and you ask me that question, I'm like, it's very nice that the Commanders, like, were interested in helping the city, you know, be at the table, and the NFL was interested in helping the city be at the table in this competition. But that does not mean that we have to then give you the land for $1 rent and then give you development rights, or that we have to contribute more than $1 billion of taxpayer money. And that's a totally legitimate, defensible position for a council member to take. And if I'm Mayor Bowser, it's like, they helped me, I'm going to, you know, work with them on a deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so I feel like that's most of kind of the hot button things that have been discussed the last couple of days. What else is interesting to you about this moving forward?
The whip count. Like, yeah. Are they going to pass this deal is fascinating to me, because it's fascinating to me because at the pep rally announcement, there were four council members, and right. I can go into those if you'd like, but there were four council members, and then there are three pretty vocal, public, We do not believe in either A, a stadium, or B, taxpayer funds for a stadium, who have come out against it. And right now, there are 12 members on the city council. It's 13 members, but the Ward 8 is vacant. So you're going to have to get, you know, there's four, three against. That leaves five people still in, you know, still sitting. And you have to figure out how do we get three of those people. And actually, the exclusive negotiating window, as outlined in this term deal, is it ends the same day that the special election for the Ward 8 council seat is. So you're really going forward with, hey, there are 12 people, four are with us, three are against us. Can we get three of the five? And that to me is a fascinating question because it's going to probably determine, like, can they build the stadium or not?
Right. And we know that when Nats Park was built, for instance, there was a Nats Baseball Academy in Ward 7 that had to get built. I imagine there's going to be things like that. Like what happens in other places that, whether it's support for youth football programs or Lord knows what else. Hey, all right, Events DC is involved. We need a new parking garage. Like there's going to be stuff that gets thrown in here to make these people happy. Do we have any idea of those five, like what some of their demands might be? Or is there any particular one or two that are really interesting to you of what you think they might want based off their past histories or previous statements?
So the other five council members that we're talking about here, Robert White, Christina Henderson, Matthew Frumman in Ward 3, Zachary Parker in Ward 5, and Janice Lewis-George in Ward 4. Like those five people, I don't know exactly what their demands will be. You know, they're playing pretty coy because right now in this negotiating period, the vaguer you are, that you know, the more commitments you try to get. I mean, this is a thing that like will be impressed by the timeline or improved by the timeline. And so right now, like we just don't know where they're going to be. But I got to tell you, Craig, like one political phrase that surprises me every time I hear it, even though I've been writing political adjacent or political stories or working on them with my colleagues for 3 years now, is like there's a term pound of flesh. They always talk about like this council member has to get their pound of flesh.
Yes.
And it's so funny to me because it's like people talk about, you know, football can be so brutal and violent and gladiatorial. And it's like, okay, well, this congressman is objecting to this deal so he can get his pound of flesh. It was so popular when we were talking about the Montana senator, Steve Daines. It was like, oh, he's trying to get his pound of flesh. And to me, it always is like, oh, like that's a wild way to phrase that.
They just want the thing they can put in the ad.
Totally.
To get reelected. And that's like, ultimately, that's what this is about for so many of these people is like, yeah, they run for a reason. Yeah, some of them are in it for public service. Hopefully all of them are in it for true public service and they'll have the public's best interest at heart, but they also want to keep their jobs. And like so much of politics and what gets done is about that. Who am I willing to piss off? Who am I terrified of pissing off because they might fund a primary challenge or this or that or a? It's just, it's all very silly. But you'd hope that you actually get what is best for the district. And that's what they're all going to say, right? They're all going to be like, I will do a deal that's good for the district. You know, and Mayor Bowser's like, well, we want the win. We want what's good for the district, good for the commanders, all this stuff. And it's just like, my question is like, what is good? And I think that's the thing that is hard. And, you know, you got all the marketing materials, if you will, here. And one of those pages says, oh, there'll be no new taxes and no new that. And like, and I saw there was the polling yesterday. JP Finley tweeted out the polling from, it's like Heart Research or something like that, which
team funded.
Yeah. As a team, it based off the percentages and the way the questions were written, very team funded, which fine. And it's like, do you support a stadium at RFK if there's no new taxes? And it's like, 85% yes. And it's like, no kidding. But that's not the right question. The question is like, can they actually do that? And I think part of the other question I have, Sam, is like, if they can't, who foots the bill for the extra? Because the reality is like, this is getting into national politics, but it is what it is. There's no way to separate these things. Like Trump's tariffs could massively affect the cost of a stadium. Like if you're talking about construction materials right now, and shipping costs and all these things, like we truly don't know based off what deals he cuts with what countries and where the steel and the concrete and all of these things that go, the microchips for all the technology, like they're anticipating the stadium to cost X amount. What if the stadium costs 2X? And like, who pays for that? Like those details are really important too.
Two things there. One, Terry Pegula owns the Buffalo Bills. And the Bills right now are building an approximately 65,000 seat stadium. And he actually addressed this the other day. He said, it's actually more expensive to build this stadium than we thought. And that's a huge deal. I don't want to be too out of my depth talking about what Trump's tariffs will mean. But I asked Josh Harris, who will pay for the cost overruns of this project, if there are any? Right. And he said the Commanders, 100%. So
okay.
That is a pretty clear-cut answer, where if the tariffs or something else affect the cost
right.
of goods,
be a million different
the Commanders
world.
Are going to cover it.
Yeah, I mean, just the natural way these things go. What was the last construction project you heard of that came in on budget? Now, because of the current economic situation and the trends and the predictions, most economists and most experts agree that like this is something that is going to affect it. But I'm curious how... That was why I think that's like a really important caveat is it one, it's construction. It's probably going to come in overpriced. Two, the way construction costs are headed right now, if they design this thing, you know, in the last 3 months, what the construction costs are a year from now are totally unpredictable. Maybe they're better. Maybe they're not. We don't know. But understanding that kind of stuff is really important, because so often in these things, it's like you get the private pledge and then the public has to foot the rest of the bill. If we know that the Commanders are doing it going in, I think that's great. And it also speaks to what I feel like is almost a unique facet of this project too. They're not just going to build the stadium. Like they are responsible for the development of most of the stuff around the stadium, which actually, I don't want to say like, I don't know. I don't know how good the city is at building stuff. I don't know like who did the wharf and whatever else, but I do kind of trust the Harris Group to do whatever they do well. And I am fascinated to see how they develop these different districts around the stadium, as Sam is holding up here.
Yeah, people can't really see it.
The stadium district, the riverfront district, you know, the recreation district, and like what kind of stuff goes here and how Commanders branded it is, if Josh Harris and the Harris Group are, you know, the main constructors of the rest of this 180 acres.
I think that's a trend you're seeing across sports right now. Everybody loves to talk about the Battery in Atlanta with the Braves, but like Mark Cuban, when he sold the Mavericks, like said he understood the edge in the early 2000s. He understood media rights deals were going to drive an explosion in franchise valuations, which is why he felt like the Mavericks were a good bet. He sold it because he felt like he did not understand the next edge, which is real estate development. And if you go down, it's like, the Washington Commanders, the Atlanta Braves, the North Carolina State University Wolfpack like want to build these ancillary development projects. You want to control real estate in the same way that Stan Kroenke did with the Rams. Like there are so many of these projects, I think, at this point that are driving, like the land acquisition and development is driving the franchise valuations now as much as anything. And so, you know, what can Josh Harris do? I mean, they want to put bars, they want to put restaurants, they want to put, you know, mixed-use development, retail, to like drive, you know, valuations up. And I think it also is a part of tailgating, which we can talk about. But to me, like, they have in their orbit people that know how to do those things.
Yeah.
You know, that was going to be a part of the Ted Leonsis deal in Virginia. So to me, land development goes part and parcel with owning a sports team these days.
It's the old McDonald's theory. McDonald's not a restaurant; they're a real estate company.
Exactly. Like I don't know if you saw The Founder, the movie.
Yeah, that's exactly.
But that's the scene. Like when BJ Novak is like, "You don't know what business you're in." I really think that's what's happening in sports right now.
Which is interesting too, because I think Keim asked Harris about this, of like the investment side of it, and he was basically like, "Look, we want to do it right by the fans, right by the team, right by the city." And like, if it works out for us in the long term financially, like this is not the best way I could invest this money if I was purely doing this as an investment. But also, being a landlord is a pretty good deal in the long run.
I was just saying, Josh Harris is a smart guy.
Yeah, I feel like he's like this. This is a way, but also, you know, if you're going to put up $2.7 billion, like I'm not like, hey, go billionaires by any stretch of the imagination.
Hold on. But I'm going to clip that just so you know. I'm going to clip you going, go billionaires, and that's it.
You're going to cut off the I am not right before
exactly,
it?
Exactly. It's like.
All right, that was a great time to have Sam. Get the hell out of my house. No, but I'm certainly not a go billionaires. But if you're going to put up $2.7 billion, it's not like you're not allowed to make any of that back. Like,
yeah, I mean, when you get 20 people in your ownership group to spend $6.05 billion on this thing, like people want their money back. Like,
yeah.
You know, Mitch Rales, Mark Guyne, Josh Harris all have an emotional connection to this team doing right by the city. But like, there are people who don't have that emotional connection who see this as a business opportunity. And it's like, where is my ROI?
Yeah, well, the franchise value is going to go up, and that maybe they cash out after some of this. We'll see. But you know, it's definitely going to be interesting to follow some of the pieces. Speaking of one of the other owners, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this part up. Magic Johnson, not only an owner with the Commanders, he's an owner with the Washington Spirit as well. And this actually came out in a New York Times, or I guess the Athletic piece today, that Jason Wright, who, of course, former Commanders president, mentioned to the author of this article something that, frankly, I had talked with Jason about, you know, over the course of the last couple of years, which is that they have been in contact with the Spirit about, do we want to partner here? Is there an opportunity to do something similar to the Star in Frisco, where it's like, can we build a 10,000 seat stadium that is a practice facility for the Commanders and maybe an actual stadium for high school football or the Spirit or both of those entities? And I think now with the way the Spirit are rolling, 10,000 is way too small because they're selling out Audi Field on a regular basis. But I did see in one of, I think it was the, whatever the sheet is over here with all the logos on it of the different things they could do. Like the Spirit's logo is in there. And they talk about, you know, opportunities for women's sports. They talk about some of the other things they want to do with this space besides just having the Commander Stadium there and the kind of non-sports stuff. Do we know at this point what other teams may want to get involved? What other sports facilities, professional sports facilities, could go here? Or do we think that it's going to be limited to the Commanders? It is going to be them, stadium only, no practice facility, no nothing else. And then ultimately the rest of the development goes to the mixed use or the other mix of uses that Mayor Bowser and the council want to see out of this.
So I was just looking through the term sheet because in there it does say with the potential for a women's soccer team. It doesn't say the Spirit by name, but like you said, the Spirit logo is on there. I think the Spirit moving there for a practice facility or something or games, like that's definitely on the table. And
because I think they would love, even if it's just a practice facility, right? They're playing at Audi. Their players have to drive in an hour to games compared to they're in Ashburn. And like, it would not. Michelle Kang is a smart businesswoman, the owner of the Spirit. If you want to know more about that, go look at how she became the majority owner of that team. She basically pulled a coup, which was badass. But like bringing in Magic as someone, not as a just as a big name and someone with some serious cash, but someone who is also a part owner of the biggest team in town, is in the middle of stadium negotiations. That to me felt like a shrewd move at the time. That is a compliment, and I would not be surprised to see them, and I'm also curious if there's anybody else who gets involved.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I think that they're definitely open to having more sports teams involved. But right now, Josh Harris said that he doesn't anticipate moving the team's practice facility from Ashburn. He said that they like it out there. And he said there's no plans to move the team's corporate headquarters from College Park. that could change. I know that, you know, Tom Sherwood, who you brought up, has been, you know, critical of teams that are, or excuse me, corporations that quote unquote play in the district, but they have their corporate headquarters where it's more tax advantageous in Virginia or Maryland. But Josh said basically that they like having touch points in all three jurisdictions, stadium, DC, corporate headquarters, Maryland, practice facility, Virginia. It seems to me like the practice facility will stay in Ashburn, at least for the foreseeable future, which is surprising to me because that land is so valuable for data centers. I thought they were going to cash out, but it does not appear to be that way.
Well, they've set up the paperwork if they want to change their mind.
They have, yes,
and
totally.
That is something that's in the last year and a half that they got the right licenses or whatever to make sure that they can build the data centers out there in Ashburn where that land is stupid valuable.
Right. And so to me, like, there's a lot of questions, I think, that we're going to have going forward. I think they want to figure out, okay, let's get this thing passed. Let's figure out where we're going to be. And then, okay, maybe we do something like the Star. But I mean, the Star in Frisco, Texas, they have a lot more land around there than DC does. So it would be, I think, more logistically difficult.
It would move them out of Virginia. But in a lot of ways, I think the smartest place to put the new practice facility would be in Landover.
Yeah.
Like, PG County is the wealthiest black county in America per capita. And so if you all of a sudden say, all right, hey, we're trying to recruit players and like you can live amongst your peers in a majority black league out there in PG County, they have 200 acres. Certainly Maryland would, they want to use that land for what's best for the community. But also if they can welcome or keep the Commanders in a pretty large presence, it's also, again, a lot closer to the city.
Still own that land, so it would just be repurposing things that they already own.
Right, they don't have to do any kind of purchase, so they could sell Ashburn, make a ton of cash, reinvest that cash in. And the thing is, on the Ashburn site, as you well know, as someone who still has to go there on a more regular basis than I do, that place, they don't have the room to expand. Like, they've already knocked down almost all the walls inside that they can. There's not really room because of the way like the hills are shaped for extensions on that. They'd run out of either parking or practice space, so if they want to have a modern NFL practice facility, they need to build a new one. And it would, to me, it would make sense to say, hey, giant tech companies that are flush with cash and running out of space in Ashburn, who's the highest bidder? Okay, you own this now. We're going to Landover. And so I don't know what that means for their relationship with Virginia, because I, like you said, or like you referenced, Josh said they like having it in all three. But that would not surprise me long term if that was a play.
No, it makes a lot of business sense for some good business people. And I would say the other concern or question that I have about how the team approaches this, if they do ultimately get approval, is tailgating. I know that's been a thing that people have been really concerned about. They have 22,000 parking spaces at Northwest Stadium. They're going to go down to approximately 8 in DC. And as you pointed out, like, they say that they'll start with a little surface parking, but it'll all eventually be in structures. I asked a Commander's official, hey, how is this going to work? Like, will you be able to tailgate if you're there? And this person basically said, look, like, we will figure out how to make it a tailgating experience in a parking structure. I don't know. They did not have details on what that would look like. But if that doesn't work out, they can go to the area, the stadium district we're going to develop right in front of the area, and they can tailgate there, which obviously would be in team-developed, team-leased places. So what does tailgating look like? How do people get to the park, especially if there's only going to be 8,000 parking spaces? You're going to have to rely on metro, rideshare, bikes, things like that. But it's I think the logistics of this site, it's a totally fair and open question, because that's the inherent cost of centrality and, you know, getting the emotional spot that appeals to people.
I mean, this is anything in a city. Like, there are, if you want space, you got to go out to the suburbs. If you want centrality, you want convenience, like, you're going to have to deal with some other stuff. It's why, you know, living in the city and paying for parking every month in my own residence, like, it's not great. Like, it just is a part of it, though. If you want to have that convenience, you're going to have to pay for it. And so I get it. And there's some people that care a lot about the tailgating. But at some point, you have to make choices. And I think that's really a good place to end, is like, over the next 3 months, a lot of people are going to have to make choices. And for city council members, it's going to be, do you want the stadium here or not? And I think ultimately that is the leverage that the Commanders have. Of course, the city council members have their vote as their leverage on the other side. Anything else you want to add on the tail end here to wrap up?
One thing I've heard a lot from fans that I want to add is about personal seat licenses, PSLs, which are going to make tickets more expensive. I think Buffalo is actually, again, a great example of this, because in Buffalo, they're building a similar size structure and they just introduced PSLs for the first time. About 20 of the 32 teams have them. Josh Harris said PSLs are just a part of building a new stadium in the NFL because it's a big upfront infusion of cash. And the way PSLs work, it's like buying a ticket to get into a store to then buy something. You're going to have to pay for the right to buy your seat if you're a season ticket holder. And for the lower, you know, end tickets for the common fan, in Buffalo, you buy a 30-year PSL and it's between $2,500 and $8,000. If you want
per
a more
year.
No, or no, it's you buy it for 30 years. So you have a 30-year PSL, okay. $2,500 to $8,000. And if you want a premium seat or a club seat, it's between $15,000 and $50,000.
Wow, okay.
But if you're a fan who sits in the nosebleeds, but you love your seat and you've always had it, you know, if you pay in that range, you will have the right to buy your season tickets for the next X amount of years. We don't know what the Commanders' cost will be. We don't know what the Commanders', you know, terms will be in terms of the length of the deal. But that is something that I've heard from fans, because it's like, hey, like, I've loved this team. I've been through the thick and thin. Can I now transfer my seats to the new stadium? Because, like, I was here when y'all were down and now y'all are up and I want to still be there.
Right.
So I think that's a question that I have. And I asked Josh Harris about the affordability and he was like, look, I totally understand PSLs are a big thing people talk about. We will have an affordable game day experience even in the context of PSLs. And to me, the question is, okay, what are the ticket prices going to be? What are the concessions going to be? Atlanta, I think, has been a leader in the NFL yep. in making concessions affordable. Obviously, this stadium is such a big opportunity for the team and to make money and to get their return on investment. But will they keep fans along for the ride, especially the fans that were there when they were down? Legacy fans that have had tickets since Griffith Stadium, a lot of, you know, some people definitely have been there that long. That's what I'm going to be watching going forward is does he follow through and put his money where his mouth is?
So far, so good. And basically everything Josh Harris has done for the Commanders. This is going to be a big test, though. Sam Fortier will be covering it in the Washington Post. If you read it, you get his t-shirt. It's not true. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. That it's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because, like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.